thinking about peaceful transfers of power this week. Could there ever be a coup d'etat in America, an overthrow of the government? It's already happened. Bet you didn't know that. Wilmington, North Carolina was once a model of racial harmony and political cooperation. It was the great success story of so-called fusion politics, which grew up in the aftermath of the Civil War.
It was a very prosperous city. It was the largest city in North Carolina. It had a population in which the blacks outnumbered the whites. It was thriving commerce at the seaport. They had tradesmen and every trade you can think of. Their barbers, almost all of the eating places were owned by blacks. There were blacks who were on the police force, fire department. They were just part of a real community.
That's Dr. Lewin Manley, grandson of Alex Manley, a prosperous African-American newspaper man at the end of the 19th century. Manley's community, Wilmington, was wiped out in the Wilmington race riots of November 1898, which removed the elected officials in the local government and replaced them with white supremacist lawmakers who enforced the Jim Crow doctrine throughout the city and the state. This very violent transition of power is the subject of a new documentary out this week, Wilmington on Fire, by Christopher Everett.
Back in the 1890s, you had a thing, not only in Wilmington, but throughout North Carolina. It was called fusion politics. And it was pretty much white populists and black Republicans kind of merging together in this thing called fusion politics. They pretty much figured out that even though, you know, they were different races, they all had the same interests. You know, they wanted their children to be educated. They all wanted decent paying jobs. And it was trying to bring some type of equality and balance, you know, in our country, and especially in Wilmington and throughout North Carolina. And the city government in Wilmington back then was a fusion government as well. So you had people actually in Wilmington that were white supremacists of the Democratic Party at the time who wanted to kind of get that power and control back that they had prior to the fusion movement. So they pretty much conspired an actual coup d'etat, which they did on November 10th, 1898, of violently overtaking the government in Wilmington, North Carolina.
If I was in Wilmington back then, what would I have seen during the massacre itself?
Oh, wow. You would have seen, you know, just based off of some of the research and the stories that have been passed down over the years, you would have saw weeks of bloodshed. You would have saw people riding on horseback, walking down the street with guns. You would also saw a person riding in a wagon with a Gatling gun on the back of it, shooting people or patrolling, because this event was one of the first times, you know, ever that they actually used the Gatling gun. And that's like a predecessor to the machine gun on actual citizens. It was pretty much just an all-out war that lasted, I would say, about a week.
When you spoke with Larry Rennie Thomas about the fusion movement, was that a viable political coalition?
I think it was working, this experiment, if you want to call it an experiment, of blacks and whites joining together, voting together as a bloc. The blacks, the African Americans in Wilmington, were on a new vista. They said, well, we were freed from slavery. Now we're freedmen. Now we can be a part of this political process. We can be a part of this economic process. And we can be a part of this social process. I think it was great. You know, it was a good, apparently a good time to be alive before November 11, 1898. It's not funny, though, is it?
Well, Larry Thomas, he's an author, activist, and radio host. Yeah, fusion politics was very viable. Not only did they end up controlling politics in Wilmington, but throughout the whole state of North Carolina. We had a fusionist governor, Daniel Russell, back then. And the fusion movement was really spreading not only in North Carolina, but a lot of other places wanted to do the same thing. But that's one of the things that the 1898 massacre caused. It pretty much not only did it create Jim Crow segregation, but it also killed and destroyed any type of fusion movement ever. And we never actually had another fusion movement in the United States since then.
The character Kent Chatfield really describes how white supremacy was written down in in chapter and verse.
It's the Constitution and bylaws of the white government union created in 1897 by the North Carolina Democratic Party. And it's several pages long, and it describes how they're to organize, how they're to report, and how their aim is to install white supremacy government in North Carolina.
Where is all that today? Did that get repealed? Is that stuff still on the books?
Oh, yeah, because we actually show it in the film. Like, a lot of this documentation and the people who actually conspired and did the actual massacre, they, a lot of them were lawyers. When you look at the history, the actual North Carolina Bar Association was created, I think, in 1899. And a lot of the actual founding board members were participants in the actual 1898 massacre. And see, this is how they actually solidified it and kept everything intact, and no one ever came after them because they used the court systems to kind of solidify this coup and also keep everything in place, you know, over 100 years later.
Before 1898, Wilmington was a black mecca, as you describe it in the film. How has it changed because of 1898, and how can you see that today?
Oh, you can see the you can definitely see the changes, because back then, Wilmington was slightly majority African-American. Nowadays, I think the percentage is about 70-75% white, 19% black. You see a lot of the disparities, economic disparities, a lot. But it just didn't hurt the black community in Wilmington. It actually hurt the city as a whole, because back then, Wilmington was North Carolina's largest city in general. You know, it wasn't Charlotte, it wasn't Raleigh. But the 1898 massacre actually just stunted the whole growth of the city. So there's no telling what the actual city of Wilmington would be today if the massacre never happened. So it not only affected the African-American community here, but it just affected the community as a whole in general.
And what about the echoes and ghosts of white supremacy today and the talk about those movements and impulses in American life through the campaign?
You know, I think a lot of people don't really understand it, but I think, you know, white supremacy is an actual system that was constructed, and we can see it. You know, slavery and Jim Crow, that's what that was. It was a system that was created to keep a certain group of people in a certain place, you know, and that we've never really addressed it or corrected it. So we still, as a country, we've came a long way, but we still have a long way to go, and we must address, you know, racism and white supremacy.
Christopher Everett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Christopher Everett is the director of Wilmington on Fire, which is in theaters this week.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.